I have to start by saying thank you so much. From the minute I stepped in here, I've just been incredibly welcomed, and this has really been a sacred gift since I'm a pastor. I have my own congregation, and I miss them, you know. And so being able to come here, and everyone's been such a joy, and I love the communion. It was so sacred, and I loved how it felt like a family, right? When, because I lose my place all the time, and when everyone just embraced that with joy. So thank you so much. What a wonderful gift, wonderful worship. If you guys could kind of do me a favor, if you were here when Michael shared his first message, when you see him again, and he asked maybe how Sunday was, tell him, like, you know, it was good, but it was strange because Jason brought a vase and broke it, and he did the same thing. We tried to act surprised, but so just tell him that. Don't put up the sermon for like 2 weeks, so it goes by. But again, thank you so much for being here and for welcoming me. But before we get started again, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Are we okay with that? You're all wondering why I just buttoned this button. I know. I've had one question already. And it's been for over 20 years. And I'm going to be honest and vulnerable. I'm lazy. So this gives you kind of the picture like, oh, he's like kind of dressed up, but not really. Functions as a cape. And to be honest, my weight goes up and down. So instead of buying new shirts, you can button the top button and leave the middle section open. So we all good? We can move on? Good. Thank you. And again, before we get started, I want to do a practice called statio. And statio is Latin for stop. And it's a monastic prayer practice that in between time, like as you're leaving the task or the conversation or whatever you were doing, you stop and have a quick little prayer of recognition to be present for what's next. And I've found it a really helpful practice while I'm working, but especially like as I'm going to see people. We're so busy, we're so rushed, we're always trying to get somewhere. So we could get there just like a couple minutes early, just kind of ground ourselves in the place that we're at, reflect back on what we just came from, and thank God for that moment, and then set our intention, our will to be present to the moment that's right now, saying, God, I want to be ready for whatever you will give. So it's just a couple minutes. I'll lead us through a little bit, but just close your eyes. Take a couple breaths, deep breaths, and maybe notice the air filling your lungs. You'll feel the coolness as it enters and the warmth as it leaves. And maybe as you breathe in, just breathe in the Spirit of God, His holy presence. And as you breathe out, may that be your vision, that you want to bring forth the presence of God to those around you. Just a couple breaths. Now just enter into your imagination and reflect back from when you woke up, maybe, to the point you're at now. What was each moment? Is there anything to be thankful for? When did you notice God present? A little gift that you can give thanks for. What brought you life? Is there a conversation or seeing someone this morning? If there's anything where you maybe were not the person you wanted to be this morning, maybe angry, maybe a little anxious. Just give that over to God. Ask for forgiveness if you need to. Now, pray that you'd be present for whatever's next. Thank God for this moment. Thank God for who He's created you to be. Thank God for those you hope to interact with, the conversations you hope to have. And ask God maybe how He wants you to be present. Pray. Grant us, O Lord, to know that which is worth knowing, to praise that which pleases you most, to esteem that highly which to you is precious. Give us the right judgment to discern between things visible and things spiritual, and above all, to seek after the good pleasure of your will. Amen. Thanks, you guys. That was a little Thomas A. Kempis prayer, by the way. If you go to the next slide, I want to play a little game with you at first. You can't really see this, but what comes to mind when you think of public transportation? Slow? Crowded? What? People? What about people? Good, bad? Trouble, angry, good, what? Not so nice. Loud music, squished, a chance to prove your Christianity. Maybe it's a discipline. I know Jesus. How would Jesus be? I know Jesus. How would you? It was funny. My wife and I like to come into LA and take the train into LA because I hate driving in traffic. And my wife hates the freeway, period. And so I came here with Michael on a Tuesday for a staff meeting. And I'm like, hey, you know, you can hop on the metro after we get off the train and we can, you know, get off near Pershing Square, and it's a quicker walk to the office. And he's like, I've never ridden the metro before in LA. I've always wanted to, like it's a bucket list sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, well, we can do it. I mean, it's not that big a deal. But it's funny because we don't think of public transportation. Like, I'm not planning all week to go, hey, I'm getting a group together, and what we're going to do is we're just going to hop on the bus. Where are we going? It doesn't matter. The bus is all that matters. The fun, it's a ride. No, we don't think of it that way. So we have all these adjectives for how we think about public transportation. And I kind of think about public transportation as really just a means to an end, right? This is just here to serve a purpose, right? And when we think of, you want to go to the next slide, what are some adjectives when we think of other people? Do some of those adjectives from public transportation move over to the column of other people? Right? Other people are merely a means to an end. How many of you, I'm just gonna ask it, how many of you have not ever had In-N-Out? Okay. One person? Two people? In-N-Out doesn't have much on its menu. How many people who have gone to In-N-Out, have they ever gotten your order wrong? No one. How many of you who've been to Carl's Jr., how many times have they gotten your order wrong? Okay, we see some more hands, Burger King, maybe Del Taco. Like, I remember one time, I'm 53 years old, I've been going to In-N-Out. What? All right, brother. We're still alive. We're in pain most of the time, but we're making it. But when I've gotten my In-N-Out order wrong one time, I remember getting home and just smiling, oh, it's In-N-Out. Like, grace to you, In-N-Out. You've served me well all these years. But when I get my order wrong from anywhere else and you get home, right, and I'm just like, really? Really? How hard is it? Right? And then I turn those people, and we've seen this a lot over the pandemic especially, but it's really been true for years, how people get treated. You are merely a means to an end. You're a bother. You're a problem. Last week on Easter, Kurt, I listened to his message, shared a great message, and it was strange. I've had this message for a few weeks now. And he said the resurrection makes seeing different. It's not quite how he said it. Is Kurt here? Kurt, so sorry if I mess it up. Don't think of me like a Carl's Jr. server. Think of me as your brother in Christ. But the resurrection makes some sort of new reality available and present. Jesus is alive, not dead. God's kingdom is present and coming, but often it's difficult to see. And so I want to talk about how do we see this new reality all around us. You can go to the next slide. How can we begin to see how God sees us? How can we have a new way of looking at it? There's a strange thing in the Bible, in the Gospels. Jesus, one out of the four healings, were blindness. And to me, that says something, right? And we see the interactions with people, and he talks in parables, right? So they'll be ever seen but not seen, always hearing but not understanding, that there's something that blocks our ability to actually see what is going on. And so I want to read a parable in the Bible, and I'm gonna read it in two different versions. I don't know if you've ever done Lectio Divina here or Ignatian meditation. So we're going to quiet. I'm going to read a version of this passage, and that's in the NRSV, and then I'll read another version that's the indigenous people's translation. And it's different enough to, I think, it helps us engage our imagination as we get out of what we might normally hear, to hear something a little bit different. And so they change the names, like Lazarus is creator helps, Abraham, I think, is father of many. And so just sit and listen quietly, reflect, use your imagination and put yourself in the story. Maybe you're in the parable itself, I don't know how, because there's three characters, but maybe you're in one of the areas where those people are. Maybe you're listening to Jesus telling the story. What do you feel? What do you think? What do you hear? What do you notice? And I want you to pay special attention to how people see in this parable. Is there a problem with seeing, and what is that problem? So there was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames." But Abraham said, "Child, Remember that during your lifetime you received your good things in Lazarus, in like manner, evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from there to us. He said, "Then I beg you, Father, to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may warn them, so that they will not also come into this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them." He said, "No, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to him, "They do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." Just meditate quietly for a bit. There once was a man with many possessions who always dressed in the best clothes, had more than enough to eat, and lived a life of ease. Every day, a beggar named Creator Helps Him was laid at the gate of his lodge. Dogs would come and lick the sores that covered his body as he begged for crumbs from the rich man's table. When the time came for the beggar to cross over to the world of the dead, spirit messengers carried him into the welcoming arms of his ancestor, father of many nations. At the same time, the rich man also crossed over to death, and his body was buried. In the dark underworld of death, he was suffering and in pain. He looked up and saw his ancestor, father of many nations, far off in the distance. He could see Creator Helps Him being comforted in his arms. He cried out in his pain, "Father of many nations, my ancestor, have pity on me. Send Creator Helps Him to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my thirsty tongue. Help me, for I am suffering in this flame." Father of many nations said to him, "My son, do you not remember? All your days were filled with good things, but the days of Creator Helps Him was filled with sorrow and pain. It is now his time for comfort, but it is your time for sorrow and pain. Look, there is a great canyon between us, so wide that none can make the journey from here to there." The rich man hung his head and said, "Please, my ancestor, send him back to the lodge of my father and my five brothers. He can warn them of this place of suffering and pain, so they will not have to come here also." Amen. What do you think is the rich man's problem here? I mean, he's not too comfortable right now, but what led him to that? Pride? gluttonous, selfishness, greed. Did you notice who was named in the story? Who was named? Lazarus and he's just called a rich man. There's a rich man. There's names Lazarus and Abraham. If we think of the rich man, he's got a sin of omission, I would call it. He has failed to respond to Lazarus, who's placed there. There could be a couple ways of looking at it. Maybe they threw him there. But the word's also used for when the friends bring their disabled friend to Jesus and lower the mat down, and they lay him. So someone, maybe his friends, if he has any, are putting him there. But the First Nation kind of messes up the translation a little bit, and they call Lazarus a beggar. But that's not the Greek word here. He's just a poor person. Meaning, like a beggar at least has a job in the first century. Like that's how he made his living. And you would give people, and in the Roman world, there's a thing called patronage. And so the rich are expected to care for the poor. Now, it's a very, like, top-down sort of thing, right? Because it's not to bring glory or to help that person. It's actually to bring glory to the person doing the patronage. But at least they're like, this poor man's just ignoring me. It's not that he doesn't see him, right? How do we know it's not just because he doesn't see him? Yeah, he knows his name. He knows his name, yet he refuses to ever pay attention to him, to ever see him for his needs. It says that he's wearing this purple cloth. And this word here is also the same word that is used to, it's the most expensive clothes. And the fine linens is a word that, like, the priests wear these fine linens for these festivals, for these celebrations. But this rich man is, I'm rich, I'm flaunting it. I know it's not a celebration, but I'm going to act like it's a celebration all the time. My staff is going to entertain me, bless me with all this food. He's treating every day like it's a celebration, and I'm assuming, I don't know for anyone else but himself. And he knows this person, but again, refuses to do anything. Who does the rich man talk to in this story? What? Abraham. He doesn't even talk to Lazarus. And what's he doing? He's treating Lazarus like he, in death, the way he treated him in life. He still is unable to see. Abraham, because I am better than Lazarus, tell Lazarus to give me some water. Abraham, send Lazarus to do this, because that's all Lazarus is good for, to serve me. It's a powerful, disruptive parable, and that's what the parables are meant to do. They're supposed to disrupt our sensibility, help jar us out of the way we're seeing and acting and see and act a different way. I'm from Fullerton, California. well, I guess I didn't fly out of state to come preach here, but I'm from Fullerton, Orange County, and I love my city. Talk about my city like I talk about my wife and my children. God has given me this incredible gift, and the place is the most life-giving and life-draining place in my life because there's problems. And so we were doing a training around homelessness. I do a lot of homelessness 101s and 201s and trying to get our churches to engage with our neighbors. And we were at this training in a park at a community center. And this woman comes up to me and she introduces me to someone. And she says, "This is the homeless guy we serve on Saturday." And I'm like, we had some like, you know, fruit and pastries and stuff. And she goes, "Can he join us?" And I go, "Yeah. What's your name?" "Mark." "Mark, yeah, you're more than welcome to join us. Tell me about your story. You're welcome here." And we get the sense again that these aren't people around us. They're identified specifically because they're homeless. What if someone, "Hey, this old guy talking to me," which is said quite a lot, I've gotten used to it, "but this old guy, right, that's not who I am. I'm not old. I've got a story. I've got a name." You know, the first thing you do when you come in here is do the name tags. I love that. For one, because I love people, but for another thing, I'm such a huge extrovert. Like, this is like a candy shop to me as a kid. You guys, I want to get to know all of you, and so I forget who I just met. And so other people are really, we need to change the way we see them. You can switch to the next slide. And this was the big wake-up call for me. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's look at this. You can't really see this, but there's a painting on a wall that says, "Stand here and think about someone you love." Someone on the left is taking a picture. There's a woman, young woman standing there like this, and there's someone sleeping right next to her. And I'm like, that's the parable, right? I only see myself. And the irony, stand here and think about someone you love. And she's got her hand raised, and I'm assuming she's saying, "Me! I love me." That's my daughter, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. But you can move to the next slide. The big switch for me was really realizing that people aren't a problem to be solved, but a gift to be received. That's what the resurrection brings. That all are included into God's kingdom now. All are his children. They just might not know it. I had just took over as lead pastor. It's around 2008. And so, I don't know, do you guys have like a Vision Sunday where you like share like what's going to happen for the next year? We had a Vision Sunday coming up. And in that week, I work, and our church now is in this neighborhood, but there's a neighborhood, mostly immigrant neighborhood, and work with a ministry that does some community development there, and our church is there. And we had started a little, a youth group, like a youth church. And we're having our first baptism Sunday. And a lot of these folks had never experienced this. It was interesting, just a week earlier, we threw a baby shower for a 14-year-old. I didn't think in youth group I'd be throwing baby showers, but we threw like five or six of them. And then birthday parties. For kids who are having kids. And every time I was there was just nothing but pure joy. We had this baptism celebration in a backyard with a pool and funfetti cake and some incredible sandwiches. And the first baptism, I had coached the crew that lives there I'm talking with someone how to do the baptism. I'm like, so, you know, you're going to tell them what you're going to do, but then ask who from the community they would like to baptize them. Who's been important in their life? He's like, okay. And so I come the day we're doing it, and I'm like, okay, so who did Karin say he wanted to baptize him? And he's like, well, that was the problem. I'm like, okay, well, what's the problem? Just who does he want to baptize him? And it's not that big a deal. And he's like, said, Karin said, I assumed everyone. And I'm like, everyone? How does everyone baptize one person? And I said, well, why do you say that? And he said, well, because everyone's important to who I am and how I've come to find God. And so that's what we did. All of us were in the water surrounding him, and as many as we could put our hands and baptized him. My daughter got baptized at the next baptism celebration, my youngest one, and my oldest one was sitting there grumpy and sad. I go, why are you so sad? She said, because Kira's baptism was better than mine. Because of just the joy of community. And I remember leaving there, that first baptism, and thinking about my Vision Sunday sermon, and I'm like, and I was just so thankful for what God gives me during the week. But how I looked at my church was I saw them as a problem to be solved. This is where our church is now. I want it to be over here. And you know what's not getting us here is you. And so I had to confess that you are a gift to be received, not a problem to be solved. And so can we start seeing different? There's this great passage. You can move to the next slide. I and them and you and me, this is Jesus praying, that they may become completely one so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them as you have loved me. Are you catching that? That God the Father, you love everyone, my disciples, the same way you love me. And what did God say about Jesus when he was baptized? You are my beloved, in you I am well pleased. We are all God's beloved. I have this Far Side cartoon. You can't really see it, but it's how we see flowers. Looks like a beautiful flower. And then how flowers see themselves. They're making like ugly faces. Which is true. Have you ever like walked by a mirror and you're like, what the heck? I didn't know I came out in the world looking like this. We can think badly about ourselves, but we have this wonderful opportunity to receive each other as a gift from God. To mirror that belovedness in others. And what's beautiful is we get that return to us. And we start to see our own belovedness in God. And so switching the way we see to see the belovedness of God, not only in ourselves. And that's where I think we need to start. In fact, when I was younger, this was back in like 2004, around 2004, and I was going away on like a pastor's conference thing. So my wife, we went up to the mountains because she wanted to take the girls up into the mountains because I was going to be away for like five days. And on the way down, my youngest threw up all over herself, the car, and then my older daughter. My older daughter freaked out, was in hysterics, yelling. And we were planning on going to Macaroni Grill, and we couldn't go there, and so we're home. And for the whole way home, like an hour home, this is up above Pasadena area, and whole way home, she's just crying, yelling, screaming, kicking the back of my chair the whole time. And parents have, if we're lucky, like a little power surge button that goes off where we just turn off. Have you ever seen a kid, like with their parent, they're like, mom, like pulling on their mom. Mom's just completely oblivious. not paying attention. I used to look at that. I'm like, I will never be like that as a parent. That's what saves us. Because we have to shut off emotionally. Well, anyways, she's crying, screaming. My wife bathes her. She's hysterics for hours. So we just lay her in bed. She's screaming, kicking the wall. And I'm like, I'm leaving for 5 days. I can't leave her like this. And, you know, you're always taught, don't soothe your child. I mean, she's like 3 years old. And I'm like, I'm just going to go in and lay with her. So I just went in and laid in bed with her, and I just held her. And after a while, she finally just calmed down. And when I was at this conference, I was praying. And I had kind of always felt like I was never enough for God, that I had to do things to be his beloved. And I finally felt, for the first time, this is in 2004, I'm 34 years old. I'd been a pastor since 22. And I'm like, I felt God say, like, I love you more than you love your daughter. You loved her at her worst. I love you at your worst. That moment doesn't define who you are to me. What defines who you are to me is how I see you. You just need to catch up to that. And so can we see our own belovedness and share that with one another? Another beautiful gift, and if we have time, I'm going to try and get us there, which we don't have time. You can go to the slide. Is can we lament? Do you guys know the Psalms of Lament? Pick a Psalm of Lament and pray that with or from the perspective of someone who you know who is suffering. And can we start to understand and see their life and see them differently? It's amazing how that transforms you. It doesn't necessarily transform them, but it transforms us so that we can learn to see. So that we can learn to see with God's eyes. See our neighbors through God's eyes. The best way to do this, you can go to the next slide, is be like Bob Ross. Now, it is to be a learner, a student, right? To see what others can't see and then reveal that. And the best way we can do that is to be a learner, to be curious about one another, to sit and listen to those stories. Next slide. But what keeps us from that is often we don't slow down enough. We're so hurried that we forget to look around us. For those who drive, have you ever gotten in your car going to a place you always go to, and you arrive and you're like, wait, how did I get here? Did I run any red lights? Could I have gotten in an accident? Because we're not paying attention. We kind of get in this mode where we're just going to continue to see the world and act in the world the way we always have, instead of slowing down to notice those gifts. To notice those gifts, go to the next slide. Oh, there's not another one before that? Oh, there it is. Do you guys know this? Where's Waldo? To find Waldo, you got to look, because so many of the things look the same. So if we want to learn to see, we've got to practice. And that's why we practice Stasio. Stasio helped me to see differently, because I asked my will to come along. And I asked God to be a part of that. Lord, help me to see in this next space where you're present and what you're doing. It slows me down, and I'm not just there to get something done. I'm there to receive a gift from God, and that gift from God is going to come from the other. And that's exactly what I've experienced here. Not because I did Stasio, but because you guys are overwhelmingly loving. Almost too much. Let's calm down a bit, people. No. No, you do it so well. I felt so, so incredibly welcome. Sweets. Is Sweets in here? Sweets is introducing me to everyone. You're all Sweets. And then now you can go to the next slide. Then we just bear fruit. We don't have to worry about how we're going to respond, because we respond based on when we know people, don't we respond well? Right? When there's a need. I go to the same coffee shop almost daily because I want to immerse and see and get to know the folks there. And last Sunday on Easter, there were two different people who did this. I saw they got their drink from the bar, and as they were walking away, remember Jesus died for you, and walked away. And I'm like, okay, that was interesting. And then another person just said, I'm going to pray for you. And so I asked my friends who worked there, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? Did that make you feel good that people were praying for you? She's like, I don't know. It's a little weird. Do you know them at all? No. But when you know someone, do you need to ask to what to pray for? Do you need to tell people that you're praying for them? It just happens. At least that's how it should be. I know you're hurting right now. I'll keep you in my prayers. But we've got to know. And what we end up doing, how we respond. If the rich man would have known Lazarus, not just by name, but to see his own belovedness, Abraham's like, then you would have responded. And you're still the same guy that you were when you and Lazarus were alive. You don't see or treat him any different. So we've got to practice seeing. Go to the next slide. Next one. There you go. If you saw the title of this sermon, when was the last time you saw a 91 Civic Hatchback on the road? My car broke down, and I need a car. My father-in-law had a car he used to tow behind his RV. I'm like, hey, can I borrow your car? He said, sure. And I was thinking, I go, are there even any 91 Civic Hatchbacks alive anymore? Still working? Well, when I got my car, what do you think I started seeing everywhere? 91 Civic Hatchback. And my kids were younger, and so every time I saw one, I would honk and wave because I thought it was like this club, but then it just got too much because you see them everywhere. And so when you get used to seeing God's presence and belovedness in everyone, you start to see that everywhere and in everyone. And it just takes practice to recognize and discern. And then picking out Waldo becomes really easy. So practice with Stasio. And the gift, I think we always miss out on this. You can go to the next slide. When I was a kid, that's not me, by the way. When I was a kid, if I wanted to spend time with my dad, I had to do what my dad was doing. He worked in L.A. We lived in a town called Walnut off the 10 and the 60. And every weekend, he'd have to work on the car. So he had a car that would work to get him to work. So I would be there, and I wanted to be just like him. I wanted to get my hands dirty. I got to wash my hands. And back in the day, does anyone remember Lava Soap? And they used to have a lot of powdered detergent. Lava Soap basically rubs your skin raw. But my dad didn't have Lava Soap. He'd say, wet your hands, and he'd put a scoop of clothes detergent in my hands. And you rub it on your hands, and it's basically like sandpaper that it takes off a couple layers of skins. Your hands are raw, but I loved it because that's what my dad did. And we'd go to the auto parts store, and then we were most likely going to go to In-N-Out, where they never get my order wrong. And so if you want to spend time, in-depth relationship time with God, go where he's present. And he's present with our neighbors. We get to see the love of God reflected in our neighbors. That's why when I was at solidarity in the neighborhood, I saw every moment as a gift. Even though we're pulling kids off the streets, they might be drunk or high, hanging out with the other gangbangers in the neighborhood. We'd invite them in to have dinner with us and to stay if they wanted to. But I'm like, this is the best thing. Because I viewed that moment as a gift. And I was learning and being transformed. Here's a psalm of lament. I'm just going to read it really quickly and we can invite the team up. And just listen. Maybe think of someone right now who you know who's suffering and in need. And pray this with them. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I bear pain in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day long? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. And my enemy will say, I have prevailed. My foes will rejoice because I am shaken. But I trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me.